And then trying to teach people that don't really want to learn, but you have to. This isn't like a choice.
Yeah, those assholes.
I will say the Harry Potter world in Universal Studios is pretty cool, though.
You get buzzed on the butter beer.
All right, Phil, let's kick it off again. All right, guys, welcome back. Another beautiful, glorious episode of Sports Flicks Just Give Us Clicks. I'm Brad, and here with, well, maybe not all my buddies, but the most important ones.
100%. Ben Simmons, Dan Williams couldn't make it.
It's true, folks.
The medical staff held him out.
He had back spasms.
It's very nebulous.
Yeah.
Today suing arbitration for a sponsorship deal.
he's the Ben Simmons of the pod.
Today we're going to be discussing the movie Million Dollar Baby with Hilary Swank, Morgan Freeman, Clint Eastwood, and a bunch of other people that a lot of you probably recognize. So I guess we'll start right into it. And Phil, you got a movie trailer handy for us?
I owe you money.
No, sir.
I know your mama.
Thought you might be interested in training me.
I don't train girls.
People see me fight, say I'm pretty tough.
Girly, tough ain't enough.
There's magic of fighting battles beyond endurance. It's the magic of risking everything for a dream that nobody sees but you.
Who's your new girl?
Jesus.
Working the bag, boss.
I'm not your boss. You have bags working you.
What is the rule?
Protect myself at all times.
Good.
Find a man, marry him. People hear about what you're doing and they laugh at you.
I got nobody but you, Frankie.
Well, you've got me. I made a lot of mistakes in my life. I'm just trying to keep you from doing the same.
I know, boss.
Good man to have in the corner.
Yes, he is.
Look, hey, get the hell down. You know how old I am. I just want to keep her with me.
You just protected yourself out of a championship.
Frankie, I've seen you amass almost every day for 23 years. The only person who comes to church that much is the kind who can't forgive himself for something.
You got a fight I don't know about.
You gonna leave me?
Never.
Wow, with a trailer like that, how could you not be intrigued, right?
Gotta love Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, absolutely. I swear that man has been the same age for the past 84 years.
Yes, exactly.
I like $1 million and babies, so it's right down my alley.
Bud knew it was going to be a winner from the beginning. But this movie, it'd been a little bit since I'd seen it, but I was even a little surprised to go back and remember all the actors, actresses in this that maybe weren't even doing that big of parts back then, but we've all seen in various TV shows, movies, stuff like that. Guys, anybody that stuck out to you that kind of surprised you they were in this or that they played a role in this?
Mine was Anthony Mackie, who's now in the MCU and is now the Captain America going forward. Spoiler alert, if you have not watched Falcon and
Watch.
Sorry.
What happened to Steve?
But I did not expect to see him. And I was like, hey, that's Anthony Mackie. So he was my number one person that I did not expect.
I was going to ask, that had to be before he was like really in a lot of stuff, because that was a pretty small role for him. And it was kind of different than his usual role. He was like a villain, sort of like a mini villain.
Yeah.
Well, this movie was what, 04?
Yeah. 04. Yeah.
So I don't like the first Captain America was when, like, 08?
I think so.
Yeah. So he really hadn't done
it. So yeah, it was a few years before that. And actually, he wasn't even in the first Captain America, was he?
And then I swear I saw him.
Yeah. He started stuff in 02. He was in the show. Then he was in 8 Mile. I haven't seen that in forever.
Oh, yeah. He was in 8 Mile.
But I completely forgot that he was in 8 Mile.
See, where's Dan when you need him?
Oh, he was, yeah.
He was in Manchurian Candidate. He was in a few things, but being a part of the MCU is really what broke him out. Before that, he was just a lot of small parts.
I want to say Winter Soldier was the first one he was in, because he was Captain America's friend in the present. He wasn't in the first movie was all about World War II era.
Yep.
Well, and then what's the kid's name that played Danger? It's I can't pronounce it. It's
Jay Baruchel.
Yes.
Yeah. That kid.
Yeah, he's a character actor in a lot of stuff.
And that kid's hilarious. And to see him in here, I thought he provided a lot of good, like, comedic relief and stuff.
He played a good simpleton. Michael Pena was kind of surprising to me. For anyone who's watched Narcos.
What's the dude that played, what was it, Big Willie, Frankie's boxer guy before? That dude's been in some stuff, too. Was it Mike Coulter?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely been in some stuff too. Nothing huge, but it seems like he's always got some supporting roles in a lot of different movies too.
So I wanted to ask though, because I'm trying to remember back with Hilary Swank, she had Boys Don't Cry, and then it felt like there was like a swoon in her career, and then she had this movie and it made her like a star again. She started doing some movies again. Am I right about that? Or
she did a lot of TV too.
Yeah.
Well, Boys Don't Cry was 5 years before this. I mean, that was 1999. She is best.
I thought that was older than that.
That was best actress for this too, which puts her into a very exclusive club.
Yeah.
And actually in several regards, because two Oscars this close to each other is virtually unheard of. You have to go into Tom Hanks realm at that point. But she was doing some work there. She did Insomnia, which was 2002.
I didn't realize that Jess had said she played a decent role in Buffy Vampire Slayer there on TV for a little while. I guess she was in a lot of that, which I really didn't realize until she told me that.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer was actually the movie that she was in, not necessarily the TV show, I believe.
Well, she was in TV show too. She may have been in both.
She was in the movie.
I don't remember a TV show.
I don't see the TV show, but she was definitely in the movie.
I remember her being in the super depressing movie, P.S. I Love You, that I watched with Erica one time.
Oh, shock. Hilary Swank in a depressing movie.
I know, right? Yeah. I guess that shouldn't shock me.
Her M.O.
And what else?
It used to be a strong suit for her.
Yeah. So apparently she played some roles in 90210. Probably a decent amount in there too. Episodes. So, yeah, for winning those awards that she did, like Rob said, it's amazing. She hasn't been in more movies with doing so good with the ones she got those awards for back to back like that.
Hey, man, you can go on YouTube and see why Hilary Swank is no longer allowed in Hollywood. Those videos are everywhere.
And if it's on the internet, it must be true.
Yeah, you scroll down the Yahoo front page, why no one casts Hilary Swank? Click here.
Yeah. Rob always clicks there.
Boys Don't Cry was one of those things that just, the performance is amazing. Hilary Swank is just an unbelievable actress. And the surprising thing was that she came back around in this second role. She's as good.
Yeah, she did a great job in this movie. She really did.
I kind of jumped past this, but it ties into my next point, and I'm going to have Josh give me a little assist here and give me his opinion too. I guess we didn't talk about who all had seen this before, if at all, and if you had, how long ago it had been. And where I brought Josh in there, Josh made some comments about switching to this kind of movie, and I think that had a little something to do with he hadn't seen it before. So I guess we can start with Josh and then get everybody's experience with this movie.
Yeah. So I didn't really have a previous experience with this movie. And obviously, I knew it was about boxing. And I knew that there was something depressing in it. I didn't totally miss that. But I missed all spoilers and stuff. So I didn't know what it was going to be. Like, maybe she was going to lose or something. Well, it turns out I about got whiplash on the theme shift here from the movie we did last month. Okay, so we had goofy kids comedy from Adam Sandler, 2.5 from Rob, because Kevin James did a decent job playing it straight, right? And then we get this movie where a lady, she breaks her neck and then wants to commit suicide because she's miserable. It's so sad and stuff, man. I was like, wow, I was not expecting this to be where we went after last month. Here we are. So
it's fun about doing this as a group. We all get to pick movies each month, so really no one knows where we're going.
And yeah.
I continue to maintain I find it fascinating because at the very beginning when we started doing this pod with Celtic Pride as the lead dog, I was pretty sure that we weren't going to be doing Million Dollar Baby anytime soon. So here we are.
Here we are. I think you make a good point, Robin. It's, you see kind of the personalities of each one of us. And while we all like some serious movies and some comedic movies, it brings out the variety doing it this way. And yeah. I think you make a really good point there. Rob, I think you had said you had seen it before. Is that right?
Honestly, Brad, I had never seen this before.
You hadn't? Okay.
No. This is actually one of these movies that I've avoided for years on purpose.
You're welcome.
This is a rough watch for a lot of reasons.
It's well done, but it digs. It digs hard.
Primarily, when I was like, all right, how am I going to do this one? How I'm going to review out the film is primarily just on what I know, which is I know Clint Eastwood movies very well. I've watched all of them. I'm a massive Clint Eastwood as far as a filmmaker fan. The beauty of this film is really in how it's shot, the story, the pacing, everything in this is it's extremely high regard. And it's very carefully curated. It's a great story. But yeah, as far as from an actual watch standpoint, would I ever seek this one out? No.
Yeah, no, I get it. Bud, Phil, what were your guys' experiences with it?
I had never seen this before, actually, but like the spoilers of this movie are in a lot of other stuff, so I already knew what was going to happen. So it felt like I had already seen it.
Yeah.
I just didn't know exactly how it was going to happen. And I thought it was really good. One thing I really like about Clint Eastwood movies is that he always plays this like total curmudgeon kind of asshole guy, but you can tell deep down he's a good guy. He just has a very gruff exterior. But he does it in a funny way, so he's not. Like, for instance, like before he was going to take her to the championship belt fight in Vegas, he asked Morgan Freeman if he wanted to go with him. And he's, no, I'm going to stay back at the gym. And he's like, sure, he's, we could use you and all that. He's like, no, I'm going to stay back. He's like, you're not going to cry, are you? I've already got one girl. he says stuff like that that's just like funny to me. I know it's sexist, but it's just made me laugh. It's just funny because he's like such an asshole, but like he does it in a funny way, so it makes him still likable. And you know that he legitimately cares deep down. It's not just this movie, but like Gran Torino's like this, and like a lot of Clint Eastwood movies are this. And I don't know, like I really find his movies enjoyable. I mean, yes, Rob is right. Like cinematic quality, they're all good for that reason. But like also just like Clint Eastwood's character in most of these movies, it's just he's gruff, but he does it in a funny way. And I don't know, I find it humorous, entertaining.
You have to love him at the same time, like because he has just that little persona about him.
So there is a difference between Clint Eastwood the actor and Clint Eastwood the director. Yeah. And when you are looking at his acting performances, to me, Clint Eastwood is not a great actor, but he's a very enjoyable actor. I find his performance good, but basically he is still Dirty Harry. He's played one character for the better part of 40 some odd years. And I think he's what, like 92 years old now, still acting, still directing. Thumbs up.
When did Unforgiven come out? That was an awesome movie. And he looks the same age and now that he did then.
Well, the argument between these two movies, Unforgiven and Million Dollar Baby, is as well, which one is the masterpiece? Because it's like having to fight over LeBron or Michael. Someone's got to be the greatest. To me, Unforgiven is the masterpiece.
I would agree. It primarily
has to do with the fact of where he came from with the spaghetti westerns and the genre. He blows it up with Unforgiven. And I think it's most interesting is the themes that continue to play out in his films, particularly from Unforgiven through Million Dollar Baby, through Gran Torino. And a lot of this has to do with redemption. And how does a man who cannot forgive himself redeem himself? Yeah. And I think that's what's really interesting.
And you could tell he was a devout Catholic, but he still went to mass every day and pestered the priest.
Got called a pagan.
It was almost like he was a believer, but he didn't want to lead people on that he was. It was a weird dynamic, but it was interesting.
It's similar.
It showed him at the very beginning of the movie praying like over his daughters and stuff like that.
You know,
and then yet he gave the priest a bunch of hell every time he went to mass. And it was like, and then eventually when he had this impossible decision to make, he ended up turning to him for advice.
It's very similar to Gran Torino in that capacity too, where you have the interaction with the priest back and forth. Some of that, I think it's really interesting that you do have a priest as a character in several Clint Eastwood films.
Did you believe he's a Catholic in real life, honestly?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting how he actually brings a lot of questioning of Catholicism and religion, faith into his films. It's a really strong theme that continues to run through a lot of his films. But also Catholicism and forgiveness and how do you forgive? That's a huge piece of this too. So it makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. Phil?
I am also someone who's never seen it. So congratulations, Brad. You found a movie that nobody's seen except for you. I went into it knowing nothing about it. I thought it was a cool boxing movie. I was like, okay, it's a boxing movie, a female boxer. So watching it, I went through phases. Because at the beginning, I thought, okay, it's a nice boxing movie. She's going to improve. And obviously, he's going to take her on as the manager. And she's going to improve until she can win. I was like, okay, that's what's going to happen. And then, obviously, that does happen. And then she gets knocked out and all that stuff. And whenever she has that adversity and she's in the hospital, I thought, okay, somehow she's going to work through this. That's the next part of this movie. She's going to work through this and maybe
she works through this
and maybe not get back to where she was, but something good is going to come from it. Even though there's only 30 minutes left, something good has come from it. And then with the whole euthanasia part at the end, I was like, what the crap? So I went through phases watching this movie because I knew nothing going in, which I'm glad I didn't really know anything. So I went on this journey that I was not expecting to go on. But it's interesting because Clint Eastwood, this is a depressing movie, especially near the end. The movie before this that he directed was also a depressing movie, was Mystic River.
Yeah.
And, I didn't know he directed that.
Yeah, he directed that.
That is an outstanding movie.
It's also an outstanding book. I read the book before I saw the movie. And I read the book and I was like, I need to see this movie. So he did those two just downright depressing movies back to back.
Mystic River won the Academy Award too, didn't it?
No, it did not. Sean Penn won Best Actor.
Now, yeah.
And Tim Robbins won Best Supporting Actor in that too.
Yeah, but so it was interesting. He
wasn't nominated, but
it was interesting him doing those movies back to back. I found quite interesting.
I think one of the things that always drew me to this is, and not all, of course, but a lot of sports movies and a lot of movies in general follow a lot of the same base storyline, like Phil was pointing out, of this happens, there's adversity, they somehow find a way to power through, and no, it just done. Let's just end this most depressing. We're not going to go storybook line here at all. We're just going to end this as, yep, that just happened. And yep,
there they have it. Honestly, it leaves it open to wonder if Clint Eastwood might have offed himself too after he did that, because Morgan Freeman said he's like never came back to the gym. Yeah. You know,
it makes you wonder. Yeah, you don't really know.
Where did he go?
Well,
right. Maybe it was too much for him to bear and he just called it a life too.
You remember that at the end, they showed the restaurant that she had taken him to get that pie, and they showed the restaurant. Remember, he had talked about, I might just buy a place like this with that money I've got set aside. So that's where my mind went on assuming he went and bought that place and just said, done with the boxing world, forget all of it.
It's possible.
My interpretation.
I've never actually thought about that before, Bud. That's a really interesting thought. Because that would explain why Morgan Freeman's writing the letter to the daughter.
That's true.
And that's
really... Well, he could never bring himself to do it anyways, but I think that Morgan Freeman thought that was the case. That's why he did it. That's the impression I got. Plus, they had some foreshadowing with that when he went and saw the priest, and the priest was like, if you do this, no matter what guilt you're carrying around right now, this is not something you can ever come back from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So okay. I don't know. It doesn't really lead you to believe that it was a happy ending for him.
Hey, you guys mentioned so much about the priest. I have to say one of my favorite lines from this was towards the beginning where he's talking with the priest, and priest looks at him and says, "You're standing outside my church comparing God to Rice Krispies." I'm not going to lie. That line cracks me.
It's sort of like Snap, Crackle, and Pop all rolled into one big box. Hey, does that get more curmudgeon, asshole-ish?
Yeah. See, that's like what Bud was talking about. It's kind of a, Well, I do think talking about Rob's, like what he was talking about with the redemption and stuff, I think it's interesting. Usually the theme is the redemption comes from an unlikely source, like usually something he's maybe got he's pre-prejudiced against. Like in this one, it was a woman, and in Gran Torino, wasn't it like a Korean kid or something? Yeah. You know, and I even think it was like a little kid in Unforgiven or something. Yeah, I think that's interesting too. That seems to be a theme that he likes to, like, redemption from an unlikely source, you know.
Isn't it amazing all the connections that we're finding just sitting here talking
about this? It's interesting, I wouldn't have even thought to put all that together till you guys were talking about it.
So I want to throw here kind of in the middle something Rob alluded to, and guys, feel free to share as much or as little as you want on this, but honestly, what was the hardest part, the hardest scene, whatever, to watch in this? Because it's not an easy to watch one. It gets emotional. It explores a lot of dark thoughts and dark feelings on that. And realistically, there were some parts that were hard to take in. At least in my opinion, there were.
I think the hardest part for me was the scene where she's quadriplegic. She's up in the chair and she's staring out the window waiting for her family to show up. I think that just characterizes everything that she is, which is basically her hopes and her dreams of having just a normal life. She doesn't want to be trash. She doesn't want to be an orphan. She doesn't want to be. She honestly, I don't even think she really wanted to be a fighter. Boxing is an odd sport. And this is why it's so good for dramatic film, is really, who really wants to be a boxer? It's someone who needs to get out. It's someone who's trying to better their situation, not necessarily better themselves, but they're trying to better someone or just their situation. And I think that's just so sad, because when they do show up, Christ, I mean, they're wearing Disneyland shirts or something. Yeah. That's rough. Yeah. They said that she'd been sitting there for like days or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to go with basically that scene up until she asks Frankie to end her life. Just the bed scenes, her being in the bed, and you can just imagine what's going through her head. Like what Rob said, she knows that her life is basically over. There's no coming back for her from that. And then asking Frankie to end her life. Just that whole last 15 minutes of the film, or however long it was very difficult for me to watch.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's like seriously the only 15 minutes, 20 minutes of film. The whole movie's like a female version of Rocky, and then it takes the hardest left turn of all sleeping time.
Speaking of which, why did she lose that fight? That chick clearly hit her after the bell.
She didn't lose the fight.
Well, because her mom was all like, "You lost, honey, so that's all that matters." I think the other girl would have gotten disqualified, and she would have been awarded the belt, at least temporarily.
If I remember, the ref was on the other side of the ring looking the other way when it happened, and he just saw that she was down on the ground but didn't actually see the cheap shot happen, is the way I took it, but they didn't really show it directly.
The bell had already rang. That was the end of the round.
Do we only know
it was after the round?
Do we only know that she lost because of what Mom said? Is there any other time that we?
Well, it's a million-dollar fight.
But do we watching
a significant amount of money that she has? It's enough for Mom to show up with the scumbag lawyer to try.
They said no matter who won, though, they were both getting half.
It was a 50-50 split. Yeah.
And they glossed over it. I think she was making money on all those bouts leading up to that too.
They're over in Europe.
She probably had well over $1 million when it happened.
But my assumption was, yes, that she did lose simply because she couldn't get back up once she was paralyzed. Even if they could have disqualified the Blue Bear, and you get the impression they didn't see the cheap shot that led up to her falling down. You know, that
weren't there cameras?
No, ESPN doesn't televise women's fighting back then.
Yeah. Right.
What year did they ever say what year that this was supposed to be taking place in?
I think it was supposed to have taken place in 96. I could be wrong. I looked it up, and Maggie's not an actual person, but they take it from an actual story that I think happened in 1996.
Got it. Okay.
So mid-90s. Yeah.
Did that girl actually get paralyzed?
I know she got injured. Let me see. In 1996, Katie Dallum became the first female professional boxer seriously injured in the ring. It's believed to be the basis for Million Dollar Baby. That doesn't answer my question.
Did they call her Mokusla? Or however you say that? I don't know how to say it.
There is an article that says that female boxer fights for her life.
Sounds like this movie.
Sounds legit.
It took 7 minutes to lose a boxing match, to injure her brain beyond repair, and to forfeit everything about the life she once led.
What was her real name?
Katie, and then the last name is D-A-L-A-M, Dallum. So I don't know if she had severe brain injury, it looks like.
Did they pull the plug on her?
I don't know about that. It doesn't say.
Speaking of which, should we ask everyone round table if the same thing happened to one of us? Well, would you want the plug pulled or to stay alive?
Well, that was – yeah. And you saw the tipping point when they said, you'll never breathe without the machine. She couldn't even ever breathe on her own.
Yeah.
And then she lost her leg.
And she lost her leg to being bedridden. Yeah.
If there's no way of me even being able to breathe without being hooked up to that machine, then, yeah, pull the plug. Like, I think I don't want to go through that to where I can live, but only if I'm hooked up to this machine 24/7. So, yeah.
Who's paying for the machine?
They said the boxing commission.
Yeah, they said the boxing commission was paying for all that.
Oh, but you're talking about like for us? Yeah.
Yes. I'm not talking about her.
Wait, are you saying the boxing commission is not going to pay for my machine?
No.
Let's just say someone other than your family, okay? So it's not like you're not a financial burden on your family.
If I was like her and my family didn't give a rip about me except the money I made and crap, yeah, I would probably be like, I'm out. But if I could like my family still cared, and I could go to community college or whatever, and I could do well enough to like have a straw and like you could blow in it to drive around and stuff. I don't know.
Josh, it's you right now today. You do not need to go back to community college just because you're a quadriplegic.
You gotta have purpose, man. What am I supposed to do? To sit there and stare at the
watch Price is Right. Price is Right every day.
Josh, I don't know if you know this because you might not remember all of it, but you went to college.
I did.
You're good. True. You graduated.
But I was more insinuating.
Think about it. If I'm funny, I'm okay with continuing on. Even if I can't speak and you all just find the sounds I'm making funny, you know what? What do I care? Hey, y'all can keep letting me gurgle a bit.
Here's my thing. Like, I wouldn't want the plug pulled right away. I'd want to pursue every avenue to see if I could recover, but once I got to the point like her where they knew I couldn't, I wouldn't want to be a burden on my family. I'd say pull it.
But if it was Rob, I want to watch him gurgle.
Yeah, I definitely keep Rob alive.
He'd definitely be on the podcast.
I thought Phil was going to say if it was Rob, I would definitely pull the plug.
Because then it's at that point, it's even if your family's on to pay for it, they still feel obligated to come visit you all the time. And I would just hate to do that
after they go to Disneyland.
Exactly.
But if it was Rob, we could all show up 2 days late, all wearing Astros gear and stuff, and then be like, hey, Rob, sign this paper, and you turn over your portion of the podcast.
And we'd say, and we'd say, make noises, damn it. Make us laugh. Be a monkey.
Well, by the way, that Astros homestand was killer, bro.
So what was interesting, you notice even when like she lost her leg, she still had a positive demeanor about her, which is unusual for somebody who then tries to take their own life by biting their own tongue off. When she lost her leg, she even said, "They took my leg, boss," with a smile on her face. And it's just very interesting. She was always very grateful to him and didn't want to show him really that negative emotion or whatever.
What a great sports movie this was.
She had the fight till the bitter end. But she did. She really did, though. But to your point, though, not to be glib, but it spoke to like how like she was able to get herself into the position of fighting for a championship to begin with. And she had that fight and that want to. And that's probably the saddest part, is by the end of the movie, like even her with her strength and stuff and her will, still it was not enough to carry her through. In the end, it finally wore all the down. The losing the leg, the losing the ability to do anything else, really never going to be able to do anything she loved again, and then not even have anybody other than Frankie who cared about her in her life. Yeah. It just finally beat her down, and that's probably the saddest part, right? But, you
know. Yeah, and that kind of ties into that other one, the other question of not would you want somebody to pull the plug, but if you were in Frankie's shoes and somebody asked you to do that, like she asked him to help her end it, I don't know what I'd do, to be honest, guys.
It'd be way harder for me to do it to someone else than to have someone do it to me.
I guess it was who it was. If it was Rob, it's like, I got you.
No,
you're good.
I'd
man.
Keep right. I would do the we're opposite of what Rob ride. Wanted.
To stay alive.
If Rob wanted to die, I'd keep him alive. If he was alive, I'd keep him dead.
And Bud is no longer my executor.
but you know what I mean? I thought on this a lot, and I honestly don't know what I would do in that situation. That's a tough one.
I know Bud would walk up with a syringe and act like he's going to do it, but then just spray it in Rob's mouth. He's just kidding. It's Jose Cuervo.
It's actually a jello shot.
He'll make the gurgly sound again.
I want to hear the funny gurgles. No, like in all seriousness, though, I couldn't do it. I know I couldn't. If it came down to it, like Erica was like asking me, she said, just kill me. I wouldn't be able to do it. I couldn't. So, or Bud or whatever. You know,
Brad, you wrote that question down. So I knew that was the question you were going to ask. And I didn't write an answer. Because I was like, I have no idea what I would do. I just left a blank about whenever the time comes, maybe something will come to me. I have a bunch of reasons why I would help do that for that person, but I have a bunch of reasons why I wouldn't. So I have no idea what I would do.
I would do it for them, no questions asked. Boom. I'm not going to say it'd be easy, but if that's what they want. Look, and in my family, this is something we discuss openly.
That's something that families do discuss, because if like my wife Courtney and I have discussed, if this happens, what is the other person going to do? Because that's an important discussion to have. So if it's family, maybe if we've discussed it, but if it's someone I haven't discussed it with, it's hard. I'm not going to judge anybody for whichever decision they make, because I honestly don't know what I would do.
But judging is what's fun.
I feel like this is different, though, because I feel like maybe not totally different. A lot of times you'll have that, okay, if I'm brain dead and I'm a vegetable and I can never like...
Well, that's easy.
This is different. This is like laying there and you're like, I don't want to live like this. Kill me. And you can look at me and know that I'm doing it. Like, I don't know. I couldn't do that. But
yeah, those are different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
Because I feel like if you're like just a vegetable and no brain activity, like that's an easy decision.
That's easy because you know they're never going to wake up, right? You know?
Like zucchini or asparagus?
Or like a yellow squash. Or
cucumber.
To kind of flip right from that, we talked about some of the hard parts to watch of this and all that. What were you guys' favorite parts for this movie? I mean, either happy scenes or funny scenes or inspirational, whatever you want to call it. What parts did you really enjoy before we got into the dark stuff?
Let's talk about mom. About the house.
Oh god.
Her whole family was my most cringeworthy part of it.
Very cringeworthy.
It's never actually stated what her disability is. I'm guessing that
probably just obesity.
I'm wondering, as Josh would maybe be able to enlighten us upon.
Sure, what kind of hex gates in a nebulous field? What if she lived in a house? It would actually not count against her. So I don't know if Clint Eastwood needs to do his research or whatever. But yeah,
no, I think he knows that.
But 100%. You have people like that like play this, and you try, if you tried to give them something like that, they would be like, I'm not saying they all are, I'm not even saying most are, or even 50%.
They're wearing Oklahoma Sooner shirts, Josh. Yes,
exactly. So that's they always are, but
no matter
there's a lower crust in everything, and that family was the lower crust. I'll just say that.
I was gonna say, those people definitely exist.
They definitely exist. They're not most, but they do exist. They're probably, 20 or 30%. So
I felt bad in that scene for her, you're supposed to, but at the same time, I was like laughing out loud just because of how ridiculous.
Oh, it made me laugh. I was just like, oh my gosh, I know these conversations happen. I know they do.
And now the government's gonna know. They're all getting on to me.
You should have just gave me the money. And in my head, I was like, no, if she would have gave you the money, that would have been way worse. Okay. That would have cut you off. Getting a house to live in would not cut you off.
Yeah. And I kind of got the feeling like the mom was reacting like that because he was like, oh, the whole family was like, oh, so now she thinks she's better than us. Yeah. She's flashing her these, oh, I can go buy you a house. I can do that.
And I think he wanted to demonstrate how uneducated they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and they kept saying that she's obese. I've seen, man, you should see my neighbors. They're like the size of Jupiter.
She
didn't look 320 like she said.
Excuse me, but I think they listen to this podcast.
I don't care.
Be nice to your neighbors.
They ride around in a little motorized scooter that can barely keep up with their weight, walking their dogs. It's the bizarro world.
And for all they know, he lives in New Hampshire. We might be talking about New Hampshire people.
It's the land of
maple syrup that is not Canadian.
My funniest part was the part I already mentioned, the whole, or I already got one girl thing. I don't know if it was my favorite part, but a part I really liked was when Anthony Mackie's character was roughing up the mentally handicapped dude, and he comes out there and he like grabs his gloves from him and he just knocks him clean. Morgan Freeman knocks him clean out. He's like fight number 110 because he was talking to Maggie about that. He was like, everyone's got a certain number of fights in them and no one ever tells you what it is. He's like, for me, it was 109. And then he knocks him out and he's 110. I thought that part was cool because he got what he deserved.
I love the relationship between Clint Eastwood and Morgan Freeman too. Could tell like they were, it was cool how well they like worked together. They made you feel like they had been friends forever, even though it was like, a 2.5 hour long movie or whatever. You felt like you had that rapport like right away and that they knew each other. Like Bud was saying, like the funny interplay, some of it maybe not appropriate or whatever, but you could just tell that they riffed on each other. They were old friends. They were jerks to each other, but it was funny and it was lively or whatever, but they trusted each other and you could tell they were each other's best friends. So
they pushed each other to be better, maybe.
Yeah. And you could tell that Clint Eastwood, he always kept him around because he felt bad about what happened to him, how he lost his eye and stuff. So,
and they didn't have any other best friends besides each other, which was the
real
thing. I also really liked the relationship between Frankie and Maggie. Just throughout the whole movie, I enjoyed their relationship. And because what both of them needed was each other. Frankie had an estranged daughter. Maggie took the role of the daughter type, and then Maggie's father had passed away when she was young, so that's the role that Frankie took. So they had a really good father-daughter relationship throughout the movie that I really enjoyed.
Definitely.
I can't remember which fight it was, but there's one where she was getting ready to go into one of the fights, and they said, was it a jab in the tits until they turn blue and fall off? That was like, where the hell did that come from? I'm not gonna lie, I cracked up a little of that. There were just some very random quotes through through the, especially the early parts of the movie.
That's not a common phrase you use.
I mean, only once a year.
When you're reprimanding your employees?
Only about once a year.
Not yet.
When you're doing conflict resolution. When you're doing conflict resolution at work.
Yes, conflict resolution. I mean, it works, right? No.
It's the example what not to say, right?
Yeah, that sounds like more a scenario on one of my trainings I'd have to take and what not to say.
Is this right way or wrong way to handle the situation?
Right. Mr. Bud, do the examples have to be this graphic? I'm trying to teach you guys, okay? Please listen to the training.
I'm exaggerating to make a point. I'm not exaggerating. So I thought what was really interesting about when looking at the characters of this, we talk a lot about the villains and stuff in the movie. And I thought this movie had a ton of different directions you could go with villains, both obvious and non-obvious in this. And I wanted to bring it back a little more specific. Who or multiple who's of were really to blame or responsible for Maggie's injury?
The stool that she landed on.
Yes. Oh, how about the tree? How about the tree that the stool was made out of?
I did put the stool as my non-obvious villain. If the stool wasn't there, that wouldn't have happened.
If you asked Clint Eastwood, it was all Morgan Freeman's fault for convincing him to train.
He took that back at the end, though. He took that back.
But I like to take what you said literally and thinking actual Clint Eastwood blames Morgan Freeman.
It was a headline.
Yes. Hey, I'm bad about remembering characters' names.
I just like to take that in a more literal sense.
Yeah, haven't you seen Hilary Swank like rolling around in a wheelchair in real life? You know?
Yeah.
Obviously, Blue Bear. She would have to be like a villain, even though she wasn't in there very long. Mm-hmm. She, of course, cheap shotted Maggie and caused the injury. The family, the mom in particular, but the whole family, you know, mm-hmm. Didn't want anything to do with her until they thought they could see dollar signs.
I'm going to actually say, and do a controversial pick. Uh-oh. And say Maggie.
Oh,
hot take.
Because,
all right.
Because she knew that this was a cheap shot artist. I guarantee you that what's her name? Blueberry. What's her name?
I thought it was Bluebear.
Bluebear. I guarantee you she's done that before. She has done that before in a fight.
Blueberry.
Maggie should have. You have to keep your head on a swivel when you're playing her.
What did Frankie always tell her? Protect yourself at all times.
And if you remember, she blamed herself afterwards and said, I should have protected myself at all times.
So that's what makes it tough. It's hard to get on to them.
So now I feel bad that I said her because she blamed herself and probably was depressed because she blamed herself. So now I feel like a jackass.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brad.
I think she as you should. As the undercover villain also, Phil. So thanks for rubbing it in.
I see Frankie, Clint Eastwood's character as a villain. Particularly the Big Willie was there for 8 years and then give him a title fight. Yeah, there's a reason why Big Willie walked. Who takes 8 years on that?
If Big Willie had stayed.
He gave Big Willie the stiff Willie.
If Big Willie had stayed and he was still the manager, he wouldn't have probably taken on Maggie. So then she wouldn't have had that injury.
Yeah, sure.
So Willie's the bad guy.
Interesting. Willie just wanted what's coming to him.
Hey, he's two fights away. All right, two or three.
You know, man, the whole gym is hanging on by an absolute thread because it's either Maggie or danger after Big Willie.
Yeah, nobody in the gym was any good. Like, they all sucked.
I know.
He said that Mackie guy, Anthony Mackie's character, had a heck of a left cross or something like that, but he had the heart the size of a peanut or something like that. Like he quit too easily.
Yeah.
I think he had ability. He just didn't have the drive.
Yeah. And it sounded like he was getting big ticket fights, but kept getting knocked out because they were making fun of him for a while.
So to Phil's stool reference, so we could blame the tree it was made out of. or the lumberjack for cutting the tree down, or the tree for existing. So Phil is blaming
the God unseasonably wet temperatures that led to it growing in the first place.
So
I'm
Phil
surprised
is,
you don't just want to blame Frankie for not having quicker reflexes, you know, grabbing that stool out of there really fast.
No, see, if we're blaming the tree, God put the tree there, so Phil is blaming God.
Thank you.
It wouldn't be the first time God killed people. So if you want to look through the Bible, he did it all the time.
God, the enemy of man.
Noah's Ark, all those people that were washed away in the flood, if you want to. This took a different turn.
And the ark was made of wood.
Oh, no, not that again.
Back around.
Circle.
It's a circle.
And how did the first sin happen? Off of a tree.
Yeah.
Well, with that note, why don't we take a second and take it to, I would say, to the wives to get their opinions, but I think we're maybe a little singular today, so maybe we'll take it to a wife, my wife, real quick, and see what she thinks. All right. Normally, this would be where we talk to all the wives about their opinion of the movie we're reviewing, but in this particular situation, it appears only Jessica, my wife, is participating this month, so we'll change it from Wives Pod to Jessica's Pod or Jessica's Wild Ass Takes or whatever we want to say. So, hi, Jess.
Hello.
For this movie, Million Dollar Baby, can you tell us what your history was with it? Have you seen it before, seen it much, been a while?
I've seen it before, but it's been, I don't know how many, it was close to when it came out when I first saw it.
Yeah, which, if I'm not mistaken, was early 2000s, so it's been a minute or two, yeah. There's obviously a lot of really good ones, a lot of really good characters and actors, actresses, but who was your favorite character and or actor slash actress in this story?
I would have to say, obviously, Hilary Swank was awesome, but Morgan Freeman by far was one of my favorites. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Anything in particular about his character, or are you just a big fan of a lot of stuff he does? Or
yeah, I think he's overall pretty good.
Yeah, he has a lot of good movies. There's no doubt about that. He didn't disappoint here either.
Yeah, and he played a very different role in this one than he plays in lots of them. Yeah. So that was cool.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It doesn't have to be with him necessarily, but was there like a favorite part of the movie, favorite scene or something that you really liked that involved him or didn't involve him? Like what sticks out to you if you think back about this movie?
Probably the part where I kept telling Clint Eastwood, hey, you need to watch out for this girl. And then he finally realized how cool she was and how good she could be.
Kind of saw what wasn't on the surface.
Yeah.
Saw what was really there.
Yeah. Like she was actually better than Danger, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Overall, how much you enjoyed this movie? I mean, I think we're going to rate this out of 7 speed bags in reference to the speed bag that Maggie borrowed from Frankie without Frankie knowing it exactly. So out of 7 speed bags, what do you think you would rate it? And give us a little insight as to why.
I'd probably give it a 4 or a 5 because it made me sad, even though it was good.
It was definitely a very emotional movie.
Quite the tearjerker, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Any last thoughts before we sign off?
No, I think I'm good. I'm tired.
All right, you heard it. She's tired, but she made it here for this recording this time. Thank you, as always, for taking the time and sharing your thoughts with us and all of our listeners out there. So thank you.
Y'all have a good one.
That certainly took less time than the wives part usually does. Welcome back to our random ramblings and opinions. So another one I had, guys, is I think Morgan Freeman did a great job, not only in his official character as Eddie, but I thought he did a great job at narrating just the story of this. So I'd pose to you, other than Morgan Freeman, who would you want to narrate the story of your life or story of the biggest accomplishment in your life, however you want to look at it?
With narration, I have to start with James Earl Jones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then second is Michael Caine. Those are the narrators of my life story.
I like that. James Earl Jones is, yeah, that's a really good one. That's mm-hmm. probably what I would say. Obviously, I would also have to throw Danny DeVito in there. Why not? That would just be fun and entertaining.
Now, Danny DeVito as one of his characters, like as the Penguin?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That would be, yeah, sure. Let's do that.
Frank Reynolds.
Yeah. And then who else? I guess you could pick somebody like a Patton Oswalt if you wanted to have like a Goldberg's kind of feel to it. I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah. I would probably say James Earl Jones also.
I told you guys this yesterday, but I would pick a fictional character, Dr. Steve Brule. It was actually played by John C. Reilly. Yeah, so I guess he could say John C. Reilly in the Steve Brule voice, because I've had a lot of ridiculous, goofy things happen to me in my lifetime, and I feel like he would be the perfect person to deliver that in a lighthearted way. Mine would be more of a comedic story and less of a drama.
One of my favorite shows, your new shows, is Never Have I Ever, and it's on Netflix. And it's a show about this Indian teenager, high schooler, and her life is being narrated by John McEnroe for some who the hell knows what reason. And I love the whole idea of that. So who would narrate my life? Let's just take someone who I just randomly dislike and say, let's have LeBron James narrate my life. And have him go openly question, why am I narrating this kind of life? Why do I care about Rob so much?
So this would be like more like a punishment to LeBron?
It's a punishment for John McEnroe in the show. He keeps going, why am I narrating this?
Nobody picked Tom Hanks. I mean, come on.
I have a funny one and then maybe a little more serious. How about, I was thinking, was it Bobcat Goldthwait?
There you go.
That dude's one. Voice.
You can listen to his voice break the entire time.
That dude is crazy. And it would, like I said, I picked a serious and funny one because it depends what the overall, you know, story was, so to speak. Is it something that you want to be humorous? Is it not something you want to be humorous? My more serious one was Fred Savage.
Yeah, there you go.
Wonder Years fame.
Yeah. And dude's got an iconic voice, and he has since he was a kid.
Another one I think would be fun is to just go like voice actor, go that route. So like Kevin Conroy, who was the voice of Batman the Animated Series, he did Batman. Or Rob Paulsen, who did Yakko and Animaniacs and a bunch of voices. That way you can have someone who can do numerous voices throughout the narration.
Yeah.
I want the guy who did the Halo voice, the Halo Spartan guy, Steve something, yeah. And then I want, what's that guy's name? Gilbert, whatever.
Gilbert Godfrey?
He passed away, man.
I want him to do Phil's line. So
he can come back and do it.
Except he passed away.
He can come back.
But we'll reanimate him so that he can do it. Can we stitch together like old, like...
I'm sure we can.
I mean, if Disney can bring people back to life in some of the movies, so brought back Peter Cushing in Rogue One, right? So we can stitch together some Gilbert Godfrey narration, hopefully.
I like where this is going, man. I'll take Tommy Pickles narrating my life.
See?
Tommy Pickles.
Or Mark
Rugrats. Daily there. That would be good.
Or Mark Hamill as the Joker.
Oh, George Takei.
George,
that, there you go.
Yeah, George Takei would be good.
Oh, my.
Sorry.
Oh, my. Yeah. You start really digging into it. It's amazing. The voices or whatever personalities, it could really change the feel of the story, right? The feel of the story, exactly. Feel of the movie, whatever. It could really screw it up terribly, or it could actually make it. I don't know. That's why I threw it in there. I thought it's a fun question, but it really does make a difference in movies like this.
I've mentioned that I think that Clint Eastwood's been playing the same character for 40 some odd years. Morgan Freeman, when I first saw Morgan Freeman, I think it was in Unforgiven. And he looked old and was playing this same character back then. And that's 1992.
Yeah.
It just never seems to end, but he's like the greatest narration character actor of all time.
Yeah, like this, like a sage kind of.
It's just that velvety voice, man. He looked old and driving
in this, he's always like the moral like compass. Usually,
I think of Morgan Freeman.
Is he like Benjamin Button? When has Morgan Freeman ever been young?
Yeah, I think like of Morgan Freeman as like one of those comfort actors that just whenever I see him, I feel comforted because I know I'm going to enjoy the movie and enjoy
until this movie. He betrayed you on this movie, didn't he, Phil?
Yeah, he did.
I will never forgive him. No. But I did love his character in this movie.
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves? Is that the one with Kevin Costner in it? He was in that movie too. Yeah. But he was basically the same guy. Did that predate? That was after 92, I think. That was like 95.
When was Men in Tights? That's the only way I'm able to.
Men in Tights. That was a funny movie. I like that.
Harry Ellis is the best Robin Hood, in my opinion. So I'm a big Robin Hood Men in Tights fan.
What's funny, I didn't think about it until I was writing stuff down. So the three main characters, if you will, Frankie, Maggie, Eddie. Can we get a little more variety on names? I'm just saying. Everybody has to end in IE, right, Joshy?
That's right, Joshy. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, 91. Booyah. So it did. Morgan Freeman was in that.
Okay. 91.
And he looked old.
And he looked the same as he did in this movie.
Maybe him and Clint Eastwood made a pact to like never age.
And a pact to be in a bunch of movies together too, apparently.
Yeah. You're like, we're going to make a pact to never age so we can continue playing the same roles we do in the early 90s that we in the 2022s.
Yeah. It's like Estelle Harris, who played Estelle Costanza in Seinfeld. She's playing this old lady in like the 1990s, which I guess she's like was in her 60s or something like that. She just recently passed away this month, even. She was playing that old lady part for God knows how many years. It's crazy. But she really, I guess, wasn't really that old, but she was playing that old and she just continued to play it on. How old are these people?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, they're shapeshifters.
You think about it, a lot of great actors and actresses throughout history made careers out of playing the exact same part and tons of movies, and those are great examples. Now that we've heard one rating and kind of overall opinion of this, before we get into our own ratings of the movie and just general summarizations, I was going to see if Phil had any ratings, reviews from critics and or other viewers other than our fine minds.
I do. First, I have a couple of casting what ifs, if you don't mind me throwing those in.
Oh, curveball. Let's do
like
it.
I like it. The first person attached to play Maggie was Sandra Bullock.
I could see that.
And then the second casting what if, the last casting what if, I only had two, was also Ashley Judd was considered for the role of Maggie.
Cool.
Thoughts about either one of them?
Hillary Swank's better.
I don't know about Ashley Judd, but I think Sandra Bullock could have pulled it off.
I always think of Sandra Bullock funnier, but I was also trying to think of if there was like an alternate universe, like what maybe Hillary Swank could have been. I could see her maybe being the Sandra Bullock role, like being able to play those roles maybe.
Yeah.
Also could have seen her like in Fast and the Furious, but I don't know, maybe for Michelle Rodriguez.
Between Sandra Bullock and Ashley Judd, I see Ashley Judd. The role for her is a dead ringer, but I think that Hillary Swank is much better in it.
Yeah.
That's where I would lean to. Honestly, the thought of Ashley Judd makes a little more sense to me as well, Rob, but neither one would do it nearly the justice that Hillary Swank did.
I think Ashley Judd would be playing kind of like the Where the Heart Is character in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both of them are people that I can see doing it. I don't think either one of them would be awful. I think they would be fine. But I do think Hillary Swank did better than either one of them would have.
Yeah.
What about Danny DeVito?
Danny DeVito as Frankie. The reviews are on Rotten Tomatoes. Both of them are 90%. Critics and audience is at 90%.
Rare.
Yeah. The positive review is from Eric Snyder. He said, the boxing as life metaphors that have permeated 1,000 other stories never felt as true as they do in this beautiful, understated film. It is destined to become a classic. Tony Medley said, Manipulative, demeaned religious trust is anti-hope, anti-family, pro-euthanasia propaganda, brutalizes femininity, and is terminally depressing. He wasn't a fan.
Sounds like a Protestant-leaning writer.
Not totally wrong, though. Come on.
Nah, he's not that far off from the truth on this.
I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
But like the things he questioned, like he did it in a jest way. Like he could still tell he was a man of faith ultimately.
Right.
My biggest thing is
more like the promoting of euthanasia and stuff.
Questioning religion, and this goes off on a whole different soapbox. Questioning religion isn't anti-religious.
Right.
I don't like to think that those are the same. I feel like we should agree. I feel like we should question religion to see what we truly believe. So right. It's hard for me to say that this is anti-religion when it kind of questions religion. I honestly liked kind of the back and forth of the religious aspect. But yeah, those are the two exciting reviews.
Awesome.
Back to you, Brad.
Okay, now that we've heard those official reviews, let's go around and I guess everybody give your ratings of the movie and talk a little bit about it. I think we're going to do it from 1 to 7 speed bags, since that speed bag played such a turning point and good role in the movie.
I will say, I'll go first. This is a hard movie to rate, so it's very good. But it, going back to maybe why I rated the last movie a little bit higher, because I was like, oh, it's rewatchability. That's fine. I can watch it with my kids and stuff. I can't do that with this movie. It's a movie where you watch once. Ever, maybe once a decade. I don't know. Maybe Brad's watched it like 10 times. No. I somehow doubt that. Yes. No. I'm pretty sure he probably watched it twice, once before and once now for this podcast. But I guess I would say a 6 because it's so well done. It really is. And it's well acted. And it surprises me where it went, everything. And it invokes real emotion and stuff. So I really can't give it less than a 6 for sure. And I'm tempted to give it a full 7. And the only reason I don't is because it is so sad. Like it's a sad movie and it's a sad situation. And personally, I like movies with, as cheesy as it sounds, like a happier ending or an inspiring ending, at least, even if maybe the team loses or whatever. That's where I land on it. I'm going to say 6 brand new speed bags on this one.
I'm going between a 5 and a 6. I'll give it a 6 as well. It is a great movie and filmed well. Great acting, great directing. And I'm with Josh that with the rewatchability, I don't know if I'm going to watch this again. I actually don't expect to. But I also can see how it is a great movie and well done. So I'd probably give it a 6. But I also found it interesting earlier, we were talking about Morgan Freeman movies and him looking old in the 90s, which this was made in 2004. So it wasn't made that long after the movies that you guys discussed necessarily. But we forgot the movie that was made 2 years before Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, Driving Miss Daisy, which was 2 years before Robin Hood. And he also played someone who was older in that one as well.
What about Driving Over Miss Daisy?
I missed that one, but I'm going to give
it. Is that from Beetlejuice?
No, it was from that. Okay, no, sorry. This is an aside. This was from that. What was that movie where they had like the TV got possessed and started having like bad TV shows?
Stay tuned.
Yes, and it had that guy that died.
Yes, that's the one. Yeah. And it would be like stuff like Driving Over Miss Daisy or like other things. Yeah.
John Ritter?
Yeah,
yeah, Ritter was in it.
It was like Hell TV or something like that.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, they they had a parody of Wayne's World in it.
Yeah.
Too.
Yes.
Sorry, Phil. I didn't mean to.
You're fine. I've never seen that movie.
Kind of funny. Right.
So I'm going to go ahead and give it a 6. I'm hesitating, but I'll give it a 6.
I'll do mine next. This movie was, like Josh said, this movie is really hard to rate because, and 7's a weird number, but if you look at it for cinematic value, like I could see why it was nominated for Academy Award. It won, right?
Yeah, it won.
It was powerful, moving, all that kind of stuff. But here's the thing. I really wish I would have saw this movie without knowing how it ended first, because I feel like I would have enjoyed it a lot more than I did. But to be honest with you, because I knew how it ended, I just needed to know the middle parts. It was probably less enjoyable than it would have been otherwise. And so I felt like it kind of drug on in parts. I was just waiting for the ball to drop. And so I actually would only give this a 4.5 because A, rewatchability is a huge factor. I don't know that I'll ever see it again. And I remember when this movie came out, it was a big deal and everybody talked about it. And there's like Family Guy episodes and stuff that parody it. And so I knew what happened. So I don't know. Clint Eastwood was great. He always is. Morgan Freeman was great. The acting in general was great, but I don't know. I just didn't really enjoy it all that much other than the parts I mentioned. The character development was good, but then it just ended on such a like movies that maybe they're depressing, like Cinderella Man, where they're depressing as you go, but they end in a positive note. This one doesn't do that. It's the opposite of that. And I don't know. It's not really my cup of tea, which is probably why I waited to watch it, because I had a feeling it wouldn't be. And so I'll give it a hesitant 4.5 because I do feel like it's better than that. But just for my own personal opinion, I'd give it 4.5 out of 7.
I'll give it a 6. And the reason why I'm giving it a 6 is exactly why I stated at the very beginning. All right. How I'm going to look at this film and review this film is based on what it is, based on the directory. We did Oliver Stone 2 months ago, Any Given Sunday. And we've looked at a handful of decent directors, but really, in my mind, what you're seeing here is a master craftsman, and this is art. It's not necessarily pretty to look at. I think that Bud brings up a really interesting part of this film. It's a little bit like The Sixth Sense and the idea that if you go into this already knowing what the end, what that twist is, this is not an enjoyable ride to even get on. Whereas Phil somehow lives under a rock or in his closet, had no idea how this movie actually ended. I think Phil over here actually enjoyed the movie right up to about 20 minutes left to go. And then, man, it's a toboggan ride to the bottom at that point. Guys, this is such an insanely beautiful film. And just to look at the director of photography on this, Joel Cox, this is a guy who was robbed of an Oscar, in my opinion, but he had already won for Unforgiven. He's done so many Clint Eastwood movies. And what's unique about Clint Eastwood is that he primarily uses the same director of DP. He uses the same cinematographer. He uses the same set design. He uses the same people. He tells different stories with them. That's a big reason when you look at this film, you can see Gran Torino in it, or Mystic, you know, River. You can see Unforgiven, or even American Sniper. You can really see how this is visually, it just looks like Clint Eastwood's work. This is one of these top pieces in his portfolio. It's not fun to watch. I probably would never watch this and care to ever watch this again, but that does not mean that it does not earn some respect. And ultimately, this was the best picture. It is in the top 5 best pictures of the aughts. Glad we reviewed it.
Yeah, honestly, guys.
I also didn't feel like the boxing scenes were very believable. Like when she was like every fight, like in order to tell where they were at, there was just a banner that said United Kingdom, or it would say like Ireland. It was like, it'd say like Los Angeles Fight Club. It was like, I don't know. I felt like the arenas themselves didn't seem believable for as much of a quote unquote big budget film as this. It was probably a huge budget, but it was probably decently big. And then the fight scenes just seemed kind of, I don't know. It wasn't that believable to me.
Budget for this was actually only $30 million. And it's an interesting story. The script had actually been developed years before and been shopped around. Clint Eastwood attached his name to it, and they still couldn't get anyone to actually bite on it. So Clint actually managed to get $15 million of it put up by some rando production company. I can't quite remember who it was. and then was actually at that point able to get another 15 from Warner Brothers for distribution. This was pretty shoestring. So the banners, yeah, that makes sense. But also, man, if you watch most of these boxing movies, even Cinderella Man is just like a little quick tagline down at the bottom with a date. And
yeah, but that movie was also supposed to take place in the 1920s, right? I mean, like technology and so, like, you can still tell he was in arenas, you know what I mean? And like in the 1920s, it's not like they had electric billboards back then.
Yeah, all I'm saying is, I think that's just one of those odd things about the boxing genre. I always think about just all the boxing movies I've ever seen. It always is like just a flash date of like when the fight happened and where, and flash, and then boom, then we move on.
Yeah, but then the actual fighting itself was like the training, I thought was legit. Like how Morgan Freeman taught her to hit the heavy bag, like moving around it. And then like how he taught her footwork and stuff like that. Like that was all like believable. But then the actual fights, I don't know. Like it just didn't feel like real boxing. It's not as much as Cinderella Man did.
That's fair.
Most movies do that Rocky style where it's like people are just taking like...
It's more entertaining. You know, yes.
It was just a long... It makes it more exciting than people covering up, and I don't know, but... I get it.
It's just, I don't know.
I get it. No, I see what you're saying.
Much to your guys' points, out of these 7 speedbacks, I give it a 6, as well as how most of you did. And truthfully, this was only my second time to watch this because it's tough to watch. It's not something I want to sit there and just, now I'm going to watch this every week because I really want to be depressed. I mean, you know, I see the big reason I picked it for this movie was I knew a good chunk of you. I didn't know all of you, but I knew a good chunk of you hadn't seen it before. And it really is a well-made film. And there's a reason it got the recognition it did when it was done. And I think it's a movie that most people should see once, but this is definitely not one you're going to sit there and throw on. Oh, look, that's on TV. Or, oh, I really going to want to go watch this because I'm feeling too good about myself. So, you know, I'm right there with you guys. It's definitely not a watch all the time movie, and it'll probably be a long time before I watch it again. But And I do think it loses a little something when you know what's coming. But that first time you watch it, it just hits you like a ton of bricks. And I think that's part of the beauty of the film and why you can only have that experience once, essentially. It hits you like you fell out of the backseat of a Suburban and landed on the ground like a sack of potatoes. At least that's what Bud tells me. But no,
and then you sprained your ankle while trying to get up.
Hey, it happens to the best of us. So you carried on like the true champion you are. But yeah, so I'm right there with you. I give it a 6. I can't go full 7 because it's not something I'm going to seek out to watch a lot. But you got to appreciate the cinematic beauty and talent that was done in there to create the movie. With that, I guess we're gonna maybe see. We're going to talk to Mr. Rob Hyder here and see what he's got in store for us for our next full movie and see if we're going to stay depressed, get really happy, or go some complete opposite direction. So, Rob, what do you got for us?
Gentlemen, what was your first summer job? Anyone do some work in the summer?
Oh, man.
Called Tarjay.
Cashiering.
Man, y'all should have done Caddyshack.
Oh, he's doing it.
Got to know and get yourself a little incredible Cinderella story.
Which one? 1 or 2?
The only one that deserves to
exist. There is only one Caddyshack.
Is the first one anywhere near as good as the second one?
Yes.
Phil's already had to watch the second one. He will have a very interesting take on the first one.
What streamer is it on?
Maybe a wild ass take?
Yes. I hope so.
I believe
maybe
it's on.
Yeah, Dan for the Caddyshack one. You never know. I'm not holding my breath.
And it will be quickly on the heels of the PJ Championship in Southern Hills in Tulsa, right?
True.
Feels like a good summertime watch, man. It's about a bunch of kids doing their summer job, and it's all right, man. Get us out of this funk.
Yes, sir. I like it. I like it.
As far as the streamers go, it looks like you could watch this for free on something called the Roku channel.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I have a Roku.
Try that one. And if not, pay your $3.99 and like it.
We all know I'm a big fan of Caddyshack, so I'm excited. And Phil, if you liked the second Caddyshack, there's something wrong with you. There's something wrong with you, and you'll probably hate the first one because the first one is nothing like the second one. All right. I think we're all going to look forward to watching Caddyshack, talking about that next month. And I know I'm excited about it, as that's one of my favorite movies, be it a sports movie or any other movie. That's one of my favorites. So I'm excited. Be sure to tune in for that, and tune in before then for a couple little mini pod episodes we'll be having come out soon. And so until then, thank you all for listening. We'll catch you next time.